Democrats call for immediate inflation relief. The Supreme Court hobbles the EPA's power to address climate change. Plus, more rallies for abortion rights and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 8th, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Indiana Democrats criticized Republicans for failing to provide more immediate inflation relief. A special session to provide such relief was supposed to begin Wednesday, but it was delayed for weeks as Republicans craft an abortion ban. Democrats have been calling for a suspension of Indiana gas taxes for months, a call they renewed Wednesday. They are also pushing for the proposed $225 inflation relief checks to go to all Hoosiers, not just those who filed income tax returns last year. Representative Cherish Pryor says the GOP plan would leave out hundreds of thousands of people.
Every Hoosier has value and deserves to lead their lives with dignity.
Governor Eric Holcomb has said expanding his inflation relief plan would be too complicated for a special session. Democratic Senator Shelley Yoder scoffs at that idea as Republicans take weeks to create their abortion ban.
We are about to criminalize health care. We're about to criminalize women. What, that's not too difficult to figure out?
The special session is set to begin July 25th. Should Republicans have come in to quickly pass inflation relief? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Drew Anderson, Republican Chris Mitchum, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Whitney Downard, senior reporter for the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Thanks very much to Lauren Chapman for holding down the fort for me for a couple weeks, because COVID is no joke, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Mitchum, even if Republicans want to wait until the end of the month to come in on their abortion ban, why not quickly get inflation relief passed now?
Yeah, I think there's several reasons for it, actually. And I think number one is, if you want to believe certain circles, it's the inflation relief that might be holding up this delay rather than more so than the abortion thing. I mean, you've seen examples of the House and Senate Republican caucuses having the same goal in mind, but having different ways of approaching it regarding tax relief and that bill from last session. And second of all, I think it's would be the fiscally irresponsible thing to do. If you come in without a set plan in place and you're using the per diem, you're using those, you're taking the time away from legislators back in their home districts, if you don't even have within your party what your main idea is, that could be very fiscally irresponsible when it comes to paying for these people in session. And third, I think the abortion wrinkle, other than actually discussing the policy, throws in another wrinkle, which is saying, both Speaker Houston and Bray have said any abortion access stuff is going to be regulated with more money towards parental care, both post and prenatal care. And when you've already considering you're taking out $1 billion, you're adding this, I think there's a lot more wrinkles to consider now that it's probably going to be the main reason for your delay.
So has the abortion ban and potentially spending around that complicated the inflation relief?
Well, let's be clear here. The whole special session was solely intended to focus on abortion. They were using the global inflation as an excuse for them to start, calling in the special session, because here's the deal. They could have gotten done in one day. They could have gotten it done at the end of June, and then they punted to the beginning of July because Supreme Court was going to, they're waiting on that, and then they punted towards the end. So it made it clear that this special session was only about abortion, and that checks and actually helping Hoosiers, find relief during this time was secondary. And that's been the whole entire agenda from the Republicans.
Whitney, there's been a lot of discussion since the governor unveiled his inflation relief proposal about the groups of people that it leaves out. So those who don't make enough to file their income tax returns, that's a lot of people on Social Security, people on disability, folks if they've just moved to Indiana but even have been here for a year, didn't file taxes last year in the state, that sort of thing. Is this delay potentially an indication that maybe they are looking at expanding that proposal, or is it really, in your mind, more about the abortion stuff?
I'm not actually sure that they are as universally together when it comes to inflation relief. When Senator Liz Brown was talking in the Budget Committee just 10 or so days ago, she did not seem to be a fan of it. She questioned why we weren't just dedicating that funding to higher reimbursements for foster care or for other services that the state should be providing. So I'm not sure that the Republicans are as united on inflation relief.
This was the governor's inflation relief proposal that immediately had buy-in, it seemed, from Republican leadership in the House and Senate. Is it in trouble, and should it be in trouble? Is this the smartest way to spend $1 billion?
Well, this does suggest that more is not always better. And by that, I mean when you have a supermajority, supermajority, the ability to do whatever you want to, and walk over the other side, my apologies. you'd think, the casual viewer might say, this is the easiest job in town. But actually, by having that large number of representatives and senators, they may all say R behind their names, but that's where the similarities stop. Well, you have all types of on the ideological spectrum, and I think you do have some differences of opinion about how to render a relief, which is probably doesn't please the governor, because as it was suggested, you can't be irresponsible to come back in without a plan. Well, the governor might, hearing that, would say, I kind of did that. If you look, I can give you the news release, and we have that. And even if leadership's on board, again, it proves that when you have a supermajority, caucuses of that size, it's hard. They're unwieldy. But if had there been agreement on that aspect of it, it would have made probably political sense to be appear sensitive and aggressive on inflation.
Absolutely.
Come in and handle that part and then say, but we want to be very judicious and deliberative in our approach to something as nuanced as reproductive rights and safeguarding women's health. They could have done both, perhaps. So that may be a signal that, in fact, as Whitney suggests, there
is not the slam dunk we thought
right.
It was going
to well,
be.
Just to interject real quick, that's why Democrats wanted to pause the state gas tax, because it actually would have helped bring relief directly to Hoosiers right away, because even the first round of checks, people still haven't gotten their checks yet. And so
the,
if folks are worried
about the automatic taxpayer refund from last year that was triggered last year still hasn't
happened. So pause the gas tax and they won't do it.
But you would have had people again who said, hey, I'm on the outside looking in because I don't drive, because I, you know, you will always have some group that's probably left out of the benefit. You can make an argument, well, everybody benefits when fuel prices go down because of the service providers.
But there's also a question of how much
how much trickles down in terms of grocery
but
stores.
Low-income Hoosiers would help a lot more by seeing their gas tax pause than still waiting on a check.
And all of this comes back to the point of, if you don't have a set plan in place, there's no point of bringing the legislators in and having them twiddle their thumbs and get
travel.
Democrats had a plan, just your folks couldn't get together.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question, and this week's question is, will $225 per person make a difference to Hoosiers struggling with high inflation? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, are you surprised that Todd Young voted in favor of the bipartisan Senate gun bill? 58% of you say yes, 42% say no, which I wouldn't be surprised, it's the margin in Todd Young's Senate race this fall. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled in favor of Indiana and 18 other states in a case to limit how the federal government can reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, climate advocates say it hinders the country's ability to address climate change.
Before it was stalled in court, the Obama-era Clean Power Plan aimed to set carbon emissions limits for the entire power generation industry, effectively transitioning utilities toward renewables and away from coal and natural gas. The court ruled the EPA can't adopt transformational rules like this unless directed to do so by Congress, though it can use other tools to lower emissions, like regulating individual power plants. The Hoosier Environmental Council's Kim Ferraro says for advocates who want to see every tool used to address climate change, it's disappointing.
This opinion goes a long way to gutting EPA's authority to tackle this.
Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita says the ruling will be good for Indiana's coal industry, but that's uncertain. Many Indiana utilities are closing coal plants in favor of cheaper energy sources.
Drew Anderson, Duke Energy, one of Indiana's major utilities, already said that this ruling won't affect its plans. Other major utility providers around the country have said similar things. So how much does this really affect Indiana?
Well, it's not going to affect us in a couple ways. One, we're already the worst polluted state, and then one of the worst polluted states in the nation, one of the worst waterways, all that bad stuff that the Republicans create. But also, the reason why companies are stepping up is because they're literally doing what the people in the room should be doing. And we've seen that in other situations. We've seen that in abortion. We've seen that in gun policies. Companies are the ones that now have to step up because the adults in the room sometimes aren't actually getting it done.
There's been a lot of discussion about how this ruling could go far beyond the EPA here, that it can be applied to every other federal agency and curb the federal government's ability to try and address
in the case of climate change, a crisis. Is this ruling positive for the country as a whole and in the way that it limited federal authority?
I think so, and I think what this decision says is, at least from an Indiana perspective, it has a lot more to say about the future than it does now. Mm-hmm. Basically, what the Supreme Court came out and said is, hey, EPA, this very large overarching rule that you made can't be done without congressional approval. Obviously, we're leaving the door open for more specific things, but when you're trying to do this large swath of regulations at once, you're going to need congressional approval to do that. And I think that not only does that increase the scrutiny for future EPA decisions of saying, hey, a presidential administration comes in and we can do whatever we want, I think the Supreme Court's kind of tampering that down. And I think that goes to show that it's going to give energy companies more of a leeway to have more competitive prices going forward.
I mean, asking legislators to legislate doesn't seem like too big of an ask, but is it too big of an ask for Congress anymore to legislate anything?
Yeah, because look, there's not agreement on much of anything. I suppose you couldn't get unanimous support of a resolution that apple pie brotherhood and the flag are good things. There might be somebody thinking it's some sort of plot that's that harbors some nefarious motive.
I mean, peach growers in Georgia would have a real problem.
There you go. See, so you can't do that. And what I think, you're right, this isn't about coal production or emissions. I mean, it is on its face, but it is a much deeper issue. And it's one we see unfolding not just at the federal level, but even at the state level. First of all, you look at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court raised a lot of eyebrows by even taking up this case because the Biden administration, the rule that we're talking about, had basically been undone already by the Trump administration, and the Biden administration had said, we're not going to resurrect it. We're going to work on a new rule. So it was, to a large extent, a moot question anyway. And the court, this is, of course, a court that purports not to be an activist court and only call balls and strikes,
LOL,
actually went out of its way to take on this issue, which is perhaps, for those who think this is not about coal, red flag one. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the fact that this is the same argument we heard to a certain extent in the General Assembly this past session, where you had, we don't like agencies doing all these rules, whether it was IDEM or other agencies. We should be doing that, the General Assembly, which they're not. Be careful what you want. Do you really want to do all the promulgation of rules? That would be nightmarish for them. And no per diem in the world could be enough to probably make that appealing. So what I see is almost a disdain for expertise, professional civil service expertise in any agency, and as if that's somehow evil inherently evil, and that the only thing that is pure are those rules that are promulgated by the elected officials themselves, which is not what we've been doing as a state or as a country for 100-plus years.
I'd say large overarching rules like that. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
When it comes to Indiana energy policy, Indiana is still reliant on coal more than a lot of other states. But utilities are moving away from that in favor of things like natural gas. This really won't ultimately impact that at all, will it?
No, I don't really see it having any change on what's already in the works. I think what's kind of a little counter for people who are trying to address climate change is that borders don't extend into the sky or into the ground or in the streams. What happens in Anderson upriver is going to affect Indianapolis. So you can't always say something like local rule. I think there does need to be a policy for people who are downriver.
Well, dozens of Hoosiers rallied outside the State House Wednesday to keep the fire burning in support of abortion rights.
The rally marked the day Indiana lawmakers were supposed to meet in a special session. That got pushed back as Republicans craft an abortion ban. Tracy Nix, one of the protesters, says she thinks the delay is meant to quiet some of the opposition to the impending anti-abortion measure.
But it's not going to go away. We're not going to go away. We believe that women should have the right to choose what happens with their bodies.
Mara Edwards was handing out water and sunscreen to protesters. She says Hoosiers need to stay informed about what lawmakers plan to do.
Stay angry. Stay vocal.
Legislators plan to return to the State House for the special session beginning July 25th.
Whitney Downer, this is not the first rally we've seen since the Supreme Court's decision. This will not be the last rally we see. There's one, I think, tomorrow and more between now and the special session. Are they making a difference?
No. I think that, you know, we know that in public opinion polls in the country, in Indiana, people are really divided, and it's really pretty narrow 50-50. But because we have a supermajority, you know, 100 legislators already requested and have signaled their support for anti-abortion legislation, so I don't really see them changing their mind, especially considering that they caucused in Indianapolis on Wednesday, but they were not at the State House, so they avoided the protest completely.
John, I was talking to a political scientist about some of, you know, whether it's public opinion polls or whether it's these rallies, about whether or not they make a difference to lawmakers, or even like the testimony that we'll hear at the State House once the special session begins. And he said to me that the only difference it might make is on the nuances of the bill. So what exceptions will there be, if any, to an abortion ban? Is that the only place where that sort of thing might make a difference?
Probably. And I do think that's where you, as Whitney says, there might, you know, when you look at the impact these sorts of things have, it will be probably on Republicans versus Republicans saying, do we want to penalize women? Do we want to imprison women who are seen as violating a ban? Do we want to, you know, we've all read so much about the 10-year-old girl who had to come from Ohio, go from Ohio to Indiana to get, I mean, what do we do with that sort of thing? So it's not a question of whether or not we impose a ban if we're the General Assembly supermajority. It is, what does that ban look like? And that there may be some elements there, but really, ultimately, the only thing that will, this kind of energy that we're seeing harnessed and channeled through public rallies and so forth, if that somehow can be carried into the ballot box in the polling place, which is certainly a lot of reproductive rights advocates would like to see, some states and some districts where it's a closer breakdown, you can do that. Now, that's not going to happen in Indiana because of the way the districts are drawn. I think you could see some seats shift, but it's not as if there will be a change in the dominant party within the General Assembly.
To that point, Chris, this has the potential, this ruling and the fallout from it, one way or another, has the potential to make a huge difference in this fall's elections when you look at the country. Mm-hmm. Every poll in the world showed that Democrats were really struggling heading into this fall's election because of inflation and things like that. And some of the polls have started to go the other way after this ruling. But here in Indiana, are things likely to change at all when it comes to this fall's elections?
I don't think so. And I'm glad you mentioned specifically Indiana, because I think you've been hearing a lot federally, right? It's going to impact the federal races. I don't think so much, because the whole point of the Supreme Court decision was it sent it back to the states. Go lobby your state legislature. Go talk to your neighbor and really make the change from that perspective. So I think statewide it would, more so than the federal. Absolutely.
Okay, well, everyone's being Debbie Downers here. Democrats love what we're seeing on the ground. Everyone needs to get out there, especially men need to step up here, because at the end of the day, you said, Whitney, it was 50-50, but when you look at that Ball State poll that came out in 2019, 83% of Hoosiers support abortion access in some form. And if I were the Democrats in the State House, I'd be putting down amendment after amendment, not only trying to protect women's lives, but throwing it on men. If we're going to regulate, it takes two people to make a baby. If we're going to regulate women, let's regulate men. Men, line up, snip, snip. If you're going to go after women, we're going to go after you too.
That's quite a stretch. All I would add to that
it's not a stretch because it's true. It literally takes two people to make a baby. Why are we going to regulate a woman when we could regulate men too?
Well, what I'll say to that is I'll give you the point there. Is this kind of reminds me a lot of the Education 1134, not saying if it wasn't for that constant pressure that was put on legislators at the State House whenever that was coming down the pipe. I'm not saying that was the sole reason why that bill ended up failing, but I'm wondering if it would have had a different income if you didn't have that constant pressure.
No, I agree. I think there are some issues in which that kind of pressure, on this one, I wonder if it does. But Whitney, to that point, if you're a lawmaker right now, particularly a Republican lawmaker, you referenced the letter that they sent the governor right at the end of the legislative session. If you're a lawmaker, is your mind already made up?
I would say to a certain extent, but when I called a whole slew of Republican lawmakers yesterday asking what they specifically wanted, none of them would share. I only had one lawmaker who would tell me specifically what they wanted, and the rest of them said, I am not willing to comment on exceptions. I'm not willing to say where I draw the line. I'm waiting to see what legislation is. So if they have a public opinion, they are not giving out specifics.
Well, you know why? It's because they know what they're going to do is extreme. They're going to force minors. They're going to force girls to have birth because they are set on an extreme agenda. They're going to force 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds because they would rather, you know, ban all abortions instead of actually understanding that the issue of abortion is complicated. You know, Eric Holcomb says that the issue of checks is complicated. No, abortion is. Health care is.
Nearly 30% of Hoosier households surveyed in 2020 said they either forego food or medicine to pay their utility bill, have received a disconnection notice, or keep their home at unhealthy temperatures to save money. That's data from the Energy Information Administration. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports a state agency representing consumers wants more data on Hoosiers struggling to pay bills and getting their power shut off.
During the past 2 years of the pandemic, the state required several Indiana utilities to report that info, with natural gas prices leading to big temporary rate increases for many Hoosiers, as well as inflation. The Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor says we need to start collecting that data again. Anthony Swinger is the spokesperson for the agency.
What's the impact on customers being shut off? What's the impact on customers' abilities to pay their bills and stay current on their accounts? We don't know that without seeing data.
The EIA data shows Indiana households have more energy insecurity than all but seven states in the country. Another study showed Indiana has the third most shutoffs of any state during the pandemic so far.
John Schwanis, a little related to the last topic we talked about. Do numbers like these make any difference with lawmakers who almost always, it seems, side with utilities at the State House?
They do almost always side with utilities. The potential difference here is that inflation and these kinds of rapid increases in costs on the average Hoosier family, they're not necessarily equal opportunity. They inflict equal opportunity pain, and there are people in, you know, rural parts of the state that are largely Republican that are hurting just as much as, you know, urban centers that are tend to skew Democratic. So it's not as lopsided as it might seem. This isn't shareholders, you know, fat sassy shareholders versus poor little ratepayers. Hoosiers are feeling it from one end of the state to the other. Now, what I can't help but chuckle about, and there is a theme running through today's show, I think you just alluded to, you know, here we have a state agency, that which is charged with protecting consumers. How dare that somebody with expertise in that area would suggest that he has authority to suggest that companies be compelled post-COVID to give this kind of information? That seems to me like it should be reserved for the General Assembly itself to make that decision. As another example of maybe disregard for the intersection of actually rulemaking and governance, which is the civil service side of this, versus the notion of we should do it all at the General Assembly.
Whitney, when I was thinking about this issue, it struck me a little like how we've seen the housing legislation play out at the State House. Now, they did pass some stuff last year to help Hoosiers who need help with their housing, but a lot of times they seem to side with landlords. But part of what you hear about that is everybody thinks of the giant corporate landlord, and there's plenty of those. But there are plenty of landlords who aren't giant corporations who rely on that rent in order to pay their own bills. Mm-hmm. Harder to make that argument with utilities. So is this an issue where you could see things finally swinging around in favor of ratepayers instead of utilities themselves?
I mean, I'm frankly surprised that we don't keep track of this sort of data already. It doesn't seem
like an obvious.
Yeah, if you see a problem with utility shutoffs, you should probably collect some data on why they're being shut off. So I don't really see why we wouldn't want to continue keeping this data, if not to better inform ourselves on what's happening.
At the very least, is that like a basic step you think that can get done in this state?
That would actually mean that the Indiana Republican Party cares about the everyday Hoosier, and they're not going to do that. At the end of the day, we have a horrible failing quality of life in the state, and it's because they have put businesses before everyday voters.
Do you think just at the very minimum collecting this data is something that we can get done?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say this data is not falling on deaf ears. I mean, I think credit should go to the two chairs. The credit should go to the two chairs of the utility committees, because they realize that Indiana is at a turning point right now with all of the different technology coming in, all the different energy resources. It's not that utility companies can't switch to these renewable sources because, you know, people like NIPSCO can't get the solar infrastructure in to do this because of the delays. But you have the 21st Century Energy Task Force that's head by these two gentlemen that are taking in every single account of these numbers and having price at the forefront of all of these discussions.
I mean, if you're going to say that, then you need to tell Kyle Huffner and your Republicans campaigning to actually campaign on renewable energy, because they only care about coal these days.
Just remember, sometimes data can be discomforting. For instance, say during a pandemic when you want to know how many people are dying in nursing homes, and there's some people in state government who say, you know, we really don't need that data, or not to make it publicly accessible. And so sometimes data, and I'm not one of those. I want data everywhere, all the time. That's what a democracy should be. But sometimes it can be uncomfortable.
And this data that we're talking about that was collected by the Energy Information Administration came out of the pandemic. So when things were at their worst in terms of people being able to pay their bills, but the pandemic didn't create new problems in a lot of cases. It just shined a brighter light on some of these problems. So is that sort of underlying the need for this data going forward?
I think so. I think it really shows where it better embodies where our weaknesses are, where the gaps are. You know, same with nursing home data. I remember early on, nursing homes were really pushing the state not to release that data, even though that really helped inform what sort of infection control policies needed to be put in place. So I think that the data is something that we really should be having.
All right. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Drew Anderson, Republican Chris Mitchum, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Whitney Downard of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.